thanks so much for joining us on this Thursday morning. Evan Bray, great to have you here on what's another beautiful day. More harvest-like weather going on today. Harvest is trucking along. What are we saying? About four-fifths done. I think I saw stats. It could be getting close to 80% in the province. So if we get a good weather, although I know it is supposed to cool down now in the next week, but if we can keep the moisture away, harvest should be able to be wrapped up in the bin for the majority of the province within the next week or two, that's for sure. Well, how often are you flipping through your phone, looking on social media, where you see posts, and this obviously could come from anywhere. Often they come from the United States, where you see police involved in an interaction with a person, force is being used, and often the person posting it on social media, very critical of the police, critical of it being an excessive use of force, disproportionate to what was needed. We hear about those stories often when officers use force and injury results or even death. We had in the last month, we've had a couple of police-involved shootings here in the province of Saskatchewan. While these cases are widely reported, they are exceedingly rare. And sometimes being able to try and provide that perspective is tough to do. But a new Canadian study compares serious duty-related injuries involving police to what's called avoidable harm in hospitals. So when patients are injured due to mistakes. And the numbers might surprise you. It's an interesting study. It caught my eye enough that I wanted to have a couple of guests on to talk about this. So I'm joined today by, first of all, Dr. Nick Carlton, who's a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Regina. He's the lead author of this study. Dr. Carlton, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really grateful.
And Tom Stamatakis is joining us by phone as well. Tom is in Vancouver. He is the president of the Canadian Police Association. President Stamatakis, thank you for being here today.
Thanks very much, Evan. It's a pleasure to be on.
Okay, so Dr. Carlton, we'll start with you. What incentivized this report? It's a unique report that was put together. Obviously, you did a bunch of groundwork for this. What was the purpose of this?
Well, I've had the pleasure and privilege of working with police officers in a variety of different capacities, specifically trying to build better solutions for their mental health for many years now. And quite often, we've heard comments from police officers that while the potentially psychologically traumatic events can certainly impact their mental health, they're also impacted by a variety of other things, including, for example, how they're portrayed in the media and how they feel they're supported or at times perhaps not as supported as they'd like to be by their community members. And in many cases, that tends to be focused on how they're represented after there has been an incident of use of force that appears in the media. So this really became an empirical question, and I'm very grateful to President Stamatakis because a lot of this came out of a conversation that he and I were having about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where he said, well, is there a way for us to actually analyze this? Is there a way for us to turn this into an empirical question that we can answer based on existing data? The short answer was, yes, we can. So I was supported by an amazing team of researchers to make this happen, and we were able to reach into existing databases and actually pull out numbers. And much to our surprise, despite there being commentary that you can't actually access numbers about this, there's actually a lot of really good data that helps us put some numbers and parameters around the experiences that are associated with this for our police. So you've got independent provincial civilian oversight agencies that provide a tremendous amount of information and essentially provide a lot of the numbers, the counts, the data associated with police interactions with the general public. And then you've also got information that we can get from a variety of sources about the number of interactions overall that the police have with the Canadian public. Mm-hmm. And importantly, you've got Stats Canada data. And that Stats Canada data reports on the coroner's and the medical examiner's assessments of how any one of us died. And it takes a while for that information to make it into the public domain so that you can analyze it. But these are really robust sources of information. So that's the incentive, and that's where we started.
So I'm going to just jump in for a second. Dr. Nick Carlton is who you've just been listening to, professor of clinical psychology at the University of Regina. So this study that you recently concluded, and I'm going to repeat again what it does. It compares serious duty-related injuries involving police to avoidable harm in hospitals. Can you define that a little more for me, Dr. Carlton? Avoidable harm?
Sure. So avoidable harm in the hospitals are determined by the actual, that's actually determined by the hospital members themselves. So avoidable harm in the hospitals, it would be things like patient injuries during hospitalizations that were avoidable by implementing best known practices based on the definitions coming from the Canadian Institutes for Health Information. And so these are pretty reliable measures of patient safety among Canadian hospitals over the last decade. And we can reasonably compare those, not a perfect comparison, of course, but we can reasonably compare them to duty-related bodily harm caused by police officers when it has been determined that they used force that exceeded the legally approved standard operating procedures or involved some kind of code of conduct violation. So that's as, there's not a perfect comparison here for sure. But really, our police and our healthcare are the systems, are the only systems that record this data in a robust enough fashion for us to even have a conversation. And we're going to talk about how often there might be a mistake made by a police officer that meets these criteria. You've got to have some kind of contextual comparison,
right?
Because otherwise I give you a number and what does a number mean, right?
So can we jump into what you found? Can you give me just a bit of an overall executive summary of your findings?
Sure. So when we take a look at the percentage of time, so that the, let's go with the proportion of times that a police officer, that duty-related bodily harm is caused by a police officer and that involved use of force that was, an excessive use of force beyond legally approved standard operating procedures or a code of conduct, here's what we found. That happens 1.89 times per 100,000 police occurrences. So less than one time in 50,000 police occurrences do we end up with one of those kinds of incidents. That's pretty amazing, at least to me, because that's a pretty amazing overall rate of success. That means 49,999 times that didn't happen.
Right. So, and do you have comparative data to the other avoidable harm research that you did?
We do. And so for the, by comparison, and this is data that we get from the Canadian Institutes of Health Information. This is coming out of their own system. The best estimate is that about 5,566 times out of every 100,000 hospitalizations, there ends up being one of those avoidable harm instances. So that's a pretty stark difference. But I want to underscore that I think it's important to recognize that our healthcare teams are operating just like our police teams under extraordinary stress. And they have repeatedly raised these issues with a variety of different groups saying we need more resources, we need more personnel in order to manage these kinds of challenges.
Dr. Nick Carlton is my guest. I want to bring Tom Stamatakis into this conversation, president of the Canadian Police Association. So what does this study say to you, Tom?
Well, it just reaffirms what my experience has been representing police officers over, you know, more than 20 years. And the frustration that I've had over that time watching what you alluded to earlier, these media reports around incidents that are often, they lack any kind of critical context. There are a number of assumptions made before any facts are known. And that takes a toll on our members. So this just highlights exactly what we've been experiencing. When you consider, you know, the incredible work that our people do in communities right across this country. So, you know, for example, in Canada, we respond to about 12 million calls for service. Countries, you know, 10 million square kilometers in size. We have a population of about 40 million people. We have two official languages. We have large indigenous population, a very culturally diverse country. But the data consistently tells us that police officers do an excellent job, yet the reporting doesn't match. So this study sort of highlights that, and my hope is that we start to talk differently about these incidents when they happen, and talk about them in the same way that we talk about incidents when they happen in the healthcare system. We point to the systemic underlying issues, the structural inefficiencies or deficiencies that exist, as opposed to starting off from the premise that, oh, the police must have done something wrong, which is just not borne out by the stats. And even in Saskatchewan, for example, where you have a population of about 1.2 million people, you're policed by about 2,500 police officers. You've got multiple layers of oversight. I think CERT had about 13 cases in 2023. Your public complaints system handled about 240 complaints. This is, you know, in the context of hundreds of thousands of interactions between the police and the public every year, and it just doesn't fit with the way things are reported on. And the other piece is, we always hear about the initial reports, but we never hear any reporting about the outcomes. And generally the outcomes are that police officers are dealing with significantly challenging circumstances. These are incidents that unfold in a very dynamic way. Police officers are required to respond and expected to respond. And generally speaking, they do their job exactly how the public expect them to do it and how they're trained to do it.
Mm-hmm. Tom Stamatakis is one of two guests I have joining me today. Tom's the president of the Canadian Police Association. Dr. Nick Carlton, a professor of clinical psychology at the U of R, a lead author of a study that we're talking about today on police use of force and public perceptions. You're both good to stick around if we take a break.
Sure. Yeah.
Good. Okay. We'll take a break because I want to come back and dig into just a couple of more things in terms of you know, what is the impact on officers in terms of in some cases, this public scrutiny that makes allegations that maybe aren't borne out through this research that's done? And where do we go from here? What are the steps forward? Those conversations with my two guests when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show. I've got two guests joining me, Dr. Nick Carlton, University of Regina, and President Tom Stamatakis with the Canadian Police Association. We're talking about a new study that Dr. Carlton just did that essentially compares serious duty-related injuries involving police to what they're classifying as avoidable harm in hospitals, and really shining a light on the fact that it is very, very rare that serious police-caused injuries or duty-related injuries happen in our country. Tom, what is the impact of this report and this study on the members?
Well, the impact is that it validates what members have been experiencing and what they know over this period of time that was examined, which is different than how the reports typically are filed, whether it's by the media or how people in the broader community, whether they're elected officials or heads of institutions or other individuals that represent interested groups, talk about these incidents when they happen, and there's just a disconnect between the narrative that ends up developing and what actually happened. And the other part of the study that's very important for my members, it really quantifies that over that same period of time that was examined, you know, we've had about 225,000 assaults against police officers that resulted in charges against individuals that intended to do harm to police officers. That translates to tens of thousands of incidents every year. We've lost 47 Canadian police officers who were killed by intentional acts of violence since 2000. There's almost a 24% chance that a police officer is or a 24% greater chance that a police officer is going to be harmed by an intentional act of violence from a member of the public than that a police officer is going to do something that results in a negative outcome. So these sets of data are very important to our members because it really validates how they're feeling, and they're not feeling very good right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the challenges, of course, is we created these layers of oversight, which are very appropriate and necessary. Their function when they were created, so in Saskatchewan you have CERT and the Public Complaints Commission. There are similar agencies in every province in Canada at the moment. they were intended to promote public confidence and police confidence in these investigations, which were intended to improve public confidence and trust, police legitimacy, and I would argue because of the length of time that these investigations are taking, because of how people talk about these investigations when they happen, including these agencies, it's having the opposite effect. And that then has very real consequences for our members in terms of their wellness and health, but it also has real consequences in terms of the policing profession in Canada and our ability to attract people into this type of work. And I think we need to have a rethink about how we talk about these incidents so that we can promote public confidence and trust, but also encourage the kind of people that we want to come into policing to do that.
Tom Stamatakis, president of the Canadian Police Association. So, Dr. Carlton, kind of building on that, I see numerous times in this report the topic of, or the phrase, moral injury. Can you talk about what you mean by that and what you hope next steps might be as a result of this piece of work?
For sure. Moral injury describes the psychological, the emotional, the spiritual harms and impairments that can happen when somebody experiences a violation of their deeply held morals, ethics, and values. And what we know about our police in Canada is that they are coming in with tremendous moral ethics and values. They have, relative to the rest of us, they're more conscientious, they're more community altruistic, more community-minded. They're really exactly the kinds of people that we want to put on these uniforms or choosing to do so. But that also means that they're at higher risk for experiencing mental health harms when they do something that they didn't set out to do. They're putting on these uniforms to help the rest of us, to serve their communities. And so when they end up experiencing these kinds of investigations as a result of their actions, as President Stamatakis just relayed, this can be incredibly harmful. And that moral injury can result because they had to do something that they didn't want to do. That moral injury can result because in many cases we're sending our police officers out to try and essentially to try and navigate the problems of poverty or social construct difficulties. And it can also happen because they feel betrayed or abandoned by their communities or their organizations while they're going through this process it goes through the oversight and the assessment, especially when we can then see based on this data at the end of those processes, our police are doing an extraordinarily good job. But as President Stamatakis relayed earlier, we don't hear about the good news story after the fact, police officer exonerated for actions, everything is good. We don't usually hear those stories at all.
Right. So can I just jump in? We've got literally 1 minute left, Dr. Carlton. So what can we do? The social media negativity is not going away, which means the possibility of moral injury is not going away. So from this study, what have we learned? What can we do?
We've learned Canadian police officers are doing a really terrific job, and we need to actively change the narrative. We need to push back. We need to provide context and remind people that the extraordinary, overwhelming majority of the time, our police officers are doing a fantastic job, and we need to be grateful and support them.
And this is publicly available, correct?
Yes, it is. We can provide you a link that we're eager to share, and people can download and read the entire work.
Okay. If you can get me the link, we will post it on our social media as well. Dr. Nick Carlton, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And President Stamatakis, appreciate you joining the show again.
You're very welcome. Anytime.
Great to have you both here. And again, we will get a copy of the link for this study and we can make that available to you. We'll throw it up on our Facebook page. Okay, we're going to hit a break. And when we come back, a gold rush is happening in Canada. A little different than the gold rush of years ago, but one that you yourself could get involved in and could yield you a $1 million prize. That conversation coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.